Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2, Brian Hayes, Zero Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got three more games in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. The first time we haven't had a four-pack because Colorado swept Nashville. And the Rangers could be out tonight. And you got a scenario here with Calgary at home looking for a win. I know you just did a panel hit, Noodles, and I would think you know, they had to be pretty happy with the way they played in Game 4. But that building will be rocking tonight. And
that's the thing, though. I mean, Edmonton's was rocking. They came out flat. Toronto's was rocking. They came out flat. I mean, if anything, I don't know how you guys feel, but if you're sitting there last night as a Calgary Flame, guaranteed those guys are watching games. They must be, you know, you learn from other series and go, man, look at those guys. Like, you know, they came out flat. Like, I guarantee you somebody in that room mentions it. Say, hey, we, you know, it's our building. See what happened last night. We gotta be sharper.
Yeah.
Like, I would be saying that if I was a leader in that room. Guy like Milan Lucic, I guarantee he's a student of a game, the game, and he watches a lot of hockey. Guaranteed that'll come up in the room.
It's everywhere, right? Like, you turn on SportsCenter this morning. You turn on any sports channel, pick up the paper, go online. The whole story in Toronto and Edmonton was awful first period. Toronto found a way to redeem themselves. Awful first period. Edmonton couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a carbon copy of the way they both started at home. And the Oilers were actually only down 1-0 after the first period, where the Leafs were down 2-0. And that's what I think made it so surprising, the Leafs showing that perseverance. Not that it wasn't, you know, a possibility. Not that they weren't capable of doing that based on the talent that they have. But just based on the history of the series. You know, whoever scores first was batting 1,000. That came to an end last night. If you got off to a good start, generally it became 2-0 pretty quick. Then it was 3-0. Then it's 4-0. We've seen a couple of 5-0 games.
Right.
And that flipped. Lead changes for the first time in the series last night. A tie game with, like, what was it, 10 minutes to go last night? Something we also haven't seen at any point during this series. Like, there were a lot of different things that happened.
I haven't seen a bunch of OTs, Hazy. Haven't you noticed? Not a lot of, like, OT action.
No, that's, again, what stood out about the Oilers last night. As they battle back, they push it to overtime. And before you even settle into your seat,
what is it, a minute and 12 seconds left?
A minute 12 in, Kempe scores. Oilers never even touched the puck. They had the guys on the ice. They wanted on the ice.
Yeah.
It just didn't work for them.
Well, so. it's interesting because, like, I don't know if we're giving LA enough credit. That Kempe had a career year. He had 35 goals this year.
And he was a big part of last night.
Well, you talked about it earlier in the week, Hayes. That Trevor Morris turned out to be a hell of a player.
Yeah.
That's a Leaf draft pick.
He's a good player.
The other
Grundstrom's playing.
Yeah,
Dursey's playing.
Yeah, there's some good players. Obviously, you've traded younger players away and in acquiring assets here for the team that you have, you know, in
that
in
5-hole goal, Noodles, was a greasy.
Terrible. You mean Kempe's 2-1 goal, correct?
Yeah, it was like a little fan shot, and then he just ripped it on the ice, and it was the 5-hole was, like, so big. I'm like, what the hell? That was crushing.
Thing,
you can't allow that, man.
That was, I think Edmonton came out flat. They score to make it 1-1, and then that goal happens.
Oof.
Like, why always talk about timely saves? Timely, you know, plays, either good or bad. That's a TSN turning point. Now, there were several during that game. Mm, there were several during the Leafs game. For sure it is. Because, you know, you talked about the Campbell save at 2-0 last night. If that's 3-0, it looks a lot different. Maybe
it
they
could
don't
be curtains
come back,
at that
right?
point. Yeah. Great, I didn't love the Stamkos goal. I thought he should have had that. You know, especially you talk about timely. It was you're a minute in.
Yeah.
It's a one-timer basically from the point, and he didn't pick a corner. I thought Campbell should have had it. He didn't. The Hedman goal was a CNI shot that was just, barred down. It was a great shot. But the Stamkos goal you wanted, and that is a big part of the redemption, is that Campbell, you know, there's a guy we've been talking about his mental state all year, you know, as an athlete. Where is he at? Is he fragile? He got pulled the game before. Gives up a Stamkos goal early that, again, was not a great goal. And then the Hedman goal, and it's 2-0. And all of a sudden, things could have really gone haywire for him. And I thought, you know, that was obviously a very important hill to climb for Jack Campbell to prove that Game 4 was behind him and the first period was behind him, because he made some massive stops the rest of the way.
Agreed.
He was such a huge part of that win last night. And, you know, the obviously there were a lot of different opportunities that stick out, but at 3-3, Kucherov trying to pick the corner, him getting a shoulder on that, that allowed Matthews and Marner to go the other way. 4-3, they hold on, and they're going back down to Tampa with a 3-2 lead. Frankie Corrado obviously was a big part of the pregame, the postgame, the intermissions last night. He was down in the building, and he joins us now here on Overdrive. Frankie, how would you describe the difference in emotion, the difference in mood in that building after the first period compared to after the third period?
Yeah, I mean, like, you could feel the energy kind of get sucked out of that building as Tampa has the early momentum in the game, right? Like, talk about that Stamkos goal. I don't think Tampa necessarily earned that goal by any means. That's just an over back check, missing assignments, not catching the second wave. And so, you know, you give up that one, you give up the Hedman one on the power play. And, you know, there's nothing fancy about that power play either, right? Like, it's just shots to the net. It's bodies in front. It's meat and potatoes hockey for a very good Tampa team. And that's been part of their recipe. But when those two things happen, you can just feel the energy kind of get drained. And people are looking around saying, they can't believe it. Like, it's here we go again. Like, have they not learned the lessons? And I really thought it was the 5-on-3 kill. And I know it was, you know, a shorter duration, but Campbell makes some really big saves. You get fortunate that Kucherov misses the net on a one-timer where he has a lot of net to work with. So, yeah. You know, you can talk about being opportunistic offensively. You also need to be opportunistic defensively, if that makes sense, right? Like, you get the timely save, you get a lucky bounce, and so, you know, those things kind of help propel you into the intermission. And, you know, I can imagine going into that intermission, you're thinking, okay, like, Tampa had every reason to bury us there. You know, they had a chance. We only got four shots on net. That's not going to cut it against Vasilevsky, but we're very much in this game. Like, they didn't run away with it. They kind of kept us in it. And now there's an opportunity with 40 minutes left to take over control of the game. And the thing I liked about how the Leafs approached it was they chipped away at it. Like, how many times over the years have we seen the Leafs where it's not going their way, they get frustrated, and then there's the parade of penalties, or it's the parade of mistakes, or it's too much offensively, like too run and gun. And in that game last night, it was like, no, let's just stick to the plan. Let's chip away at it. And we have, you know, 40 minutes to win this game. It doesn't need to be won in the next 15 minutes. They played a little bit of a long game, which I liked, and you could feel that building just come to life. Like, as that second period kept going on and they were playing on the power play, they were playing 5-on-5, they obviously weren't shorthanded. That makes a huge difference, right? And you could just feel the energy kind of build throughout the night. And, you know, you finish it off with that Matthews goal, and I thought the roof was going to pop off that place. It was really cool to see. Obviously, I've played a lot of games in that building, sat in the press box for way more games in that building. That's the loudest and most energetic I've ever seen it.
I was going to say, if I was at the game with Hayes, Frankie, he would lean over and say, I know he would say this, if Matthews scores the game-winning goal in this moment, this place is going to go nuts. Like, how was it to watch the fans and just hear that celebration? I know Matthews had the old school Ray Bourque, like, pumpernickel.
That was a
windmill.
Great selling.
Oh, it was great. It was sick. Yeah. It was the best. What was it like, Frankie?
It was so showtime. I got, like, I'll be so honest with you. It was so showtime. It was so cool. It felt like the glitz and glamour of, you know, professional sports on the highest level. You know, you think about the major soccer stars, the major basketball stars, these guys that are just revered as the world's greatest athletes. Like, you know, hockey doesn't get that kind of coverage worldwide, but as a hockey fan, as a player, being in that building and watching Matthews, that puck hits his stick and he puts it in the back of the net, I felt just you feel such a rush. You know, it's a rush of emotion, but it was incredible. And you know what, you couldn't have scripted it any better. I was asking the Tap Man in the pregame, like, do you think Matthews needs to score tonight in order for the Leafs to win? And it seems like a no-brainer, right? Like, you want to win big games. It's Matthews needs to score. Marner needs to contribute. Tavares, Nylander, like, these need to be the guys that get it going. And, you know, typically I see Matthews as the guy who gets the party started, you know, but last night he ends the party. Like, he sends everyone home happy, and the party, you know, he sends everyone to the after party, let's say, O-Dog.
Right.
You mentioned the tap man. You mentioned the tap man. What's his routine up there? Is he still having multiple?
Two drumsticks, probably.
Two drumsticks, pizza, popcorn after the first. Give me the routine.
So you could talk about Leafs players and their urgency to execute. Well, it goes with the tap man as well. Like, there's an urgency up there to he's in the doors at 4:30. Like, you know, he puts out the video of the Zambonis on the ice. Like, I'm still on the Gardner. And I see that he's tagged me in that video. And I'm like, how is this guy already at the arena? But then it's like clockwork. You can just check your phone and you know what time it is. And there's a couple slices. And then there's the coffee. And then usually the drumstick comes out with about 8 minutes left in the first period. But now there's way more press. Like, there's a lot more, you know, it's very, a lot of commotion up there. So he actually goes right from the pregame show straight to the fridge and grabs a drumstick and takes it to the seat. So
does he still brush his teeth before the game?
No. Well, he's got the mask on. He's got the mask on. So okay. He doesn't need to, I guess.
I guess, but that's not necessary. Like, yeah. Oral hygiene doesn't matter anymore.
He's such a legend up there. Everyone wants to stop and chat. He's like, guy, I got to get moving. Like, I got a game to cover. You know the way he is.
Yeah, big shooter, man. The tap man's, he's a legend down there. He's been covering games there since the first day it opened. Goes back to the gardens. He knows what's up with Frankie Corrado here on Overdrive. So as we roll it over to game six tomorrow night, I would take, if it's a tie game going into the third, I think the Leafs would accept that right now. Like, where can you sign? Basically, give yourself a chance. Right, like, considering the way Tampa has countered in games 2 and 4, their history, 16 straight wins in the playoffs coming off a loss, that's got to be the attitude. Clearly a hot start. Like, you've got to be alive and ready to play. That goes without saying. But just give yourself a chance to get a bounce and win one tomorrow night. Is that underselling it, or would you be more greedy than that if you're the Leafs?
I'm not greedy. I think they need to go in with the attitude that we really need to earn it. We're not going to get this one. You need to think about this for a second. You want to end a team's season. Like, just think about how monumental that is. And you guys all played the game, so you guys know, right? Like, you're at the rink every day with the same group of guys.
Right.
These guys become your brothers. And your practices, your games, your restaurants, you're with these guys all day. And you're going to end their season. It's not just going to get handed to you, or rarely does it. You know, it's the bad teams that kind of roll over and hand it to you. So, you want to finish these guys. It's going to be big. It's going to be monumental. And, you know, with that being said, what I'd like to see is face it head on. Like, go in there and face it head on. Don't shelter anyone. Don't coddle anyone. You have Matthews and Marner. Like, the 97 points for Marner this year, 60 goals for Matthews this year. There shouldn't be this notion on the Leafs bench or in the Leafs dressing room that, oh, we got to get you away from Cirelli and Point because those guys, they're really good defensively. It should be the opposite way around. And no disrespect to those players, but those other guys should be like, I can't handle Matthews tonight. I just, like, Marner, he's too slippery tonight. I just, like, that needs to be what you're asserting onto them, them being Tampa. So, you know, that's kind of where I'd like to see it. And let's be honest, you have to look at things that usually happen in a playoff series that haven't happened yet. And the glaring one for me is Vasilevskiy hasn't stole a game yet. So you can sit here and say that he's not going to do it, or you can say that there's a chance that that's still in the bag of tricks for Tampa. So I just think, like, you got to face it head on. You got to go right through it, because obviously I think they're 0-7 in decisive games to knock a team out. So it's not going to be an easy task.
Well, that's it. That's the number that I'm sure Tampa will be focused on. They'll be focused on two of them. One, their own 16 in a row coming off a loss, and the one that you just referenced, when the Leafs have had ample opportunities over the last 5 years to close out series. They have not been able to do it. I think it's a good sign for the Leafs. It'll say something about the way they play if Vasilevskiy is in a position where they have to steal the game, right? If he's in a position where he has to steal the game, then the Leafs are outplaying them. The Leafs are performing.
And you can live with that if you're
the
Leafs,
right?
Like, you can say that. You can say that, like, if you go in and you lose game six, right? Like, you can go in and you say, well, we just got outgunned. And you have this underlying confidence that, yeah, we're going to get them. Like, they got away with one on us, you know. But if you go in there and you start making the mistakes and you want to cheat to offense and you don't want to really earn it, then you go back with the pressure. You go back with the pressure to say we blew it. Like, we blew a great opportunity, and it's nobody's fault but our own. I think that's, you know, of all the things you need to avoid in Game 6, that's the main one, right? Like, ultimately, you do have two opportunities to win the game. I think how you come out in Game 6 is going to be huge. And let's be honest, like, when the Leafs are playing their high-tempo pace, 5-on-5, Tampa looks slow, and they're not a slow team. Like, they have a lot of guys who can motor around the ice, but I think that just speaks to the level of execution and speed that the Leafs play at when they're at the top of their game.
With Frankie Corrado, go ahead, Noodles.
I was going to say, I just wanted to jump on that, like, 5-on-5. Where are you at with the penalties? We've complained about it. I've complained about it all week just because I'd like to see some flow. I'd like to see some 5-on-5 play. I think that creates chances. I think it, you know, where are you at? Do you think that as these series go on a little bit, maybe the refs will manage it a little bit? Better's the wrong word because they're just following instructions, but
right.
Do you think that they will allow the guys to play?
You know what, Noodles, it honestly remains to be seen, man. Like, I think that I've always been of the belief that call the rule book the way you call it in the regular season and the playoffs, and I'd be okay with that. The problem now is these aren't even regular season calls that are happening. This is above and beyond, and I honestly wonder if it got to the point with, you know, the way it is, right? Like, media, we're talking, players are talking, and every year in the playoffs, it kind of comes around, and the cross checks, everyone's getting away with things, and you don't know where the line is, and we kind of make a big deal out of it. I wonder if there was a meeting at some point where they said, oh, if they don't like that, let's call everything this year and see how much they don't like that, and then they'll be begging for us to go back to the other way. Like, that's the only explanation that I can think of in my head. But, you know, with the penalty calls, I would like to see a little more 5-on-5. I just want to see it called the way it's called in the regular season. This kind of like a stick gets horizontal, but it has no bearing or effect on the play, or it's not in a critical scoring area. I don't need that. Like, Mark Giordano gets a cross-checking penalty last night. That's 2 minutes for being stronger than someone else. That's all that is, right?
Yeah, I thought
that
was
that's
weird.
The worst. Yeah, right? And so I think it should be called the same both ways, like regular season and playoffs, and that's kind of – that's just how it needs to be.
With Frankie Corrado, we'll get you out of here on a lineup prediction for tomorrow night. Do you think Sheldon Keefe has found his optimal lineup, or could you see some sort of change tomorrow night?
I think he goes with the same lineup, but I'm going to go heavy first line if I'm the coach tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, Matthews,
I thought Bunting
and Marner
looked
played.
Good last night. Like, Bunting was back to closer to regular season
good.
Bunting. Yep.
He did, and the other thing with Bunting is, like, it you know, it doesn't take a hockey player's eye to tell that he's not quite 100%. Like, you know, but it's such a gutsy effort by that guy to see the way he's grinding it out, and you just know he's not 100%, but he's giving you the most he possibly can. And, like, you guys know that stuff permeates through the bench. It permeates through the room. Like, Jack Campbell being highly competitive on that 5-on-3 kill last night, you don't think guys on the bench were saying, like, look at this guy. Like, this guy's dialed in. It's time for us to get going, too. And, like, so that goes the same with Michael Bunting. And, you know, everyone in that room knows he's probably not 100%, but the fact that he's mixing it up, he's engaged, he's involved, you know, that kind of stuff goes a long way with your teammates. So, you know, I wouldn't be too focused on lineup changes because I think they're marginal at best, right? You're talking about a fourth line player coming in and out of the
right.
lineup. I don't think the fourth line needs to play more than 5 minutes. I'm going heavy Marners and Matthews, but your team ultimately needs to put you in a situation where you can roll those guys because you're in the game. Like you talk about game four where you weren't in it. You were never in it. So what's the point of playing those guys 23 minutes? You're just wasting it, right? So
yep.
I think it's going to be up to the team to put themselves in a position where the big boys can take it home.
Yep, I think you're absolutely right. We'll find out what happens tomorrow night. It's always great catching up with you. Thank you, Frankie.
Yeah, thanks, boys.
Here's Frank Corrado. And he's doing pregame, postgame with a tap man. He
does a hell of a job, too.
Yeah,
he's
awesome. Yeah,
becoming
he's
a broadcaster.
Job.
He's great,
yep.
But you're dealing with the tap man, too. Managing the tap man. That is a.
Yeah, I
love
was
it.
Listening to them last night. There was an extended version of Yes Guy, No Guy. They were just rapid firing
wow.
through some Yes Guy, No Guys last night. It was great.
Love it.
Yeah, and he's right about the lineup. I mean, ultimately, I think they roll back with what they had last night, but it's going to come down to your big boys. That's what we witnessed last night. And Michael Bunting, who's announced today the Rookies of the Year, the Calder Trophy nominees, and he's one of them. Like that's a
had a great season.
Yeah, great season. It's a big signing, right? They got him on 2 years. too. Like, next year it rolls over. That's likely your top line next year.
And he punted out that Raymond kid in Detroit, which is a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah, I personally, I mean, the only thing that I – he's 26, and this is his seventh year pro. Like, I think – I know he qualifies for it, but that – you know, those other kids are 20.
Rules are rules, though, Noodles.
I get it. I get it, but I just – I think, you know, Raymond had – with the same amount of goals, less
yeah,
points.
Real close.
But I mean,
five or six less points. He was.
I think the spirit of the rule—that's the thing that has to be looked at. It's not Michael Bunting's fault, but
no,
it's
the
like,
kid in Detroit's going to win the award anyway.
Yeah, Sider. It doesn't matter who's second or third. But I'm happy for Bunting. He had a great season, but it just—I think the rule might have to be adjusted. That's the crazy part. Like he's 26. He played in the AHL like 7 years ago. Like, that's, you know,
yeah,
that's a pro league.
It is. I mean, it started with Makarov was the first one.
And, yeah, he was, like, 30. And then even Kaprizov, I think, was 24 last year. But
well,
like,
Panarin, too. Like, Panarin was 25, yeah. I believe, when he won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, that, you know.
Hey, so it's damn good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, those – and Panarin was unbelievable that year. He connected with Patrick Kane. Kane won the Hart that season.
Right.
Which, you know, again, I don't think Bunting's going to win, like you said. It's going to be the kid in Detroit. But – But he's had a great year, and it was a great signing. You know, what was Arizona thinking? I have no idea. But you bring him in, you get him on a two-year deal, he connects with your two best players, and the rest is history. And I think that was a necessary adjustment for Keefe last night, and I don't expect that to change tomorrow. That line's got to be intact. If he can play and he's close to 100%, I don't know what he's playing at, 85, 90%, playing with those two, right? They've been such a good connection all year. Don't mess around. So, yeah, we'll continue to look ahead to Game 6 tomorrow night. Game 6, Edmonton, L.A. tomorrow night as well. Must win for the Oilers. They're down 3-2. You got Game 5 in Calgary tonight. There's a bunch going on. You got talk about energy down in Florida. They're back there tied 2-2 tonight. Boston, you know, they got laid out pretty badly last night against Carolina. And now they're going home, and they must win tomorrow night in Boston. So,
yeah,
it's a great time of year. First round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Next week will be the PGA Championship. It is really getting close to go time in terms of what's going to happen with the Saudi League and what happens moving forward. We think Tiger will be there next week. We think Phil will be there next week. We'll get into that and more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
All right.
See this story out of Florida where a passenger with no flying experience had to land a plane?
No.
Yeah, so I guess he radioed into, air control with an urgent plea because the pilot suddenly fell ill and I guess was incoherent and like couldn't fly the plane anymore.
Wow.
Yeah. And a guy gets on the mic and he goes, quote, "I got a serious situation here. My pilot has gone incoherent and I have no idea how to fly an airplane," end quote. Mayday. Like, that is a serious issue. But apparently,
how big a bird?
It was a single-engine Cessna 280, so not a big plane. And he was just off the coast of Florida, and I guess air traffic control or whatever, someone helped him out and found a way to land the plane.
Wow.
Just incredible. Yeah.
It is.
So, anyway.
But where? Where did he land it? There's no way he brought that thing at the airport.
No, I think it was like West Palm Beach, but I think he got to the airport. I just saw it online in the break. It flew out of the Bahamas. He was flying from the Bahamas. I'm not sure where he was supposed to be going. I'm not even sure it was supposed to be to Florida. Could have been further north of that. But
imagine if it was Harrison Ford.
That's all I can think of is Harrison Ford just flying around. Flying into different pathways of major jets.
Yes.
You know, oh, sorry. You're going to have to reroute here. Harrison Ford is flying over LAX again.
Oh, I love that. That video is actually one of the funniest. Now that you know that nobody got hurt or whatever, him just like tiny little plane. He lands on the jetway, right? He didn't even land on the runway. He landed on the taxiing jetway. Like, oh.
Just a bit outside for old Harrison Ford. But anyway, yeah. I love a Harrison Ford movie. We were talking about Nicolas Cage earlier. I'd put Harrison Ford's career up against almost anyone.
For sure.
In Hollywood the last 40 years.
Yeah, I
consider
agree.
What he's been in and type of great movies he's been in. Star Wars, though, is such a hit or miss. Like, if you're not into it, you think it's the dumbest, like, nerdiest movie of all time. But if you're into that kind of stuff, it's the number one, right?
Early on, it was great. I think it got weird near the end. I haven't watched like the last five or six of them.
There's so many of them now. So many spinoffs and everything. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, Chris Solomon will join us here in just a moment of the No Laying Up podcast. So, Phil, we believe will be at the PGA Championship next week, and we believe Tiger Woods will be there. We'll ask Chris, you know, which is a more compelling story for him. Phil, considering he's been MIA, and this new book is coming out, right? This Shipnuck book is coming out, alleging that he lost $40 million in gambling over the course of 3 or 4 years.
What comments is the book, though? Did he want to do the book? Like, he came, like, he obviously sat with the guy and talked to him. Was it Phil's book? Is it Shipnuck's book? Whose book is it?
No, my understanding is it is a book about Phil.
Oh.
Where Phil, I guess, accepted the invitation to be interviewed. It doesn't sound like it's a biography or an autobiography. Right. It's, you know, it's, I believe it's a story digging deep into his life. And for whatever reason, he decided to be a part of it. Like, that's where he's very different than Tiger. Tiger's not doing anything unless he has full control. He's not giving you an interview if he doesn't want to give you an interview or if he feels like you're going to jam him up. Woods isn't going to do that. Mickelson, you know, that's the crazy thing about next week at the PGA. Like, Phil loves the press conference and he loves talking.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I don't know what that's going to look or sound like, but I have to believe he's got to step up to the podium if he's there, right? He has to.
Yeah.
Here he is. You can hear him on the No Laying Up podcast back on Overdrive. Here is Chris Solomon. What do you expect that presser to feel like, look like, sound like when Phil Mickelson finally shows up at the PGA and has to answer for where he's been the last couple of months and what's been going on in his life, Chris?
Man, you're going to hit me with one of the toughest hypotheticals there is in the game right now. I mean, it's going to be a lot of attention. I feel like there's going to be a lot of memes that come from this for how many people are going to be in that room. He is going to, I think it's going to take one person to ask a tough question, and then there's going to be about 10 more that follow. He does love a theater. He loves the stage. This is going to have to be one of the great performances of his life, a life of which that, you know, that has many, many, many great performances in it, both on the golf course and in the media. And I don't know how he spins this. I don't know how he saves himself from this. Losing all of his sponsors to all the things he said about the PGA Tour to the things he said about the people that are funding the new tour that he wants to be a part of so bad. He is a man on an island, and if he wasn't the defending champion, I don't think he would really even bother showing up at the PGA next week. But I do think we'll see him, and it's going to be quite a circus. They're going to try to get it out of the way early in the week, but it is going to be all eyes on the golf world in that press conference.
When he gets on the golf course, what kind of reception? I mean, this guy is renowned for the 7,000 thumbs up to every guy that says something. What do you? How do you think the fans accept this guy back?
I would picture on course the support to be pretty good. There's going to be some wisecracks and some, you know, some comments that people probably will think will be very funny, and they never really are. But it still has a way of captivating the fans, like you just said, and I think there's a good chance if he goes out, is smiling, is giving thumbs up, kind of encouraging the crowd to cheer for him. It's going to kind of take over, I think. I don't sense he's going to get booed. I don't sense that the wider golf audience really feels as strongly about this as a lot of people maybe in golf media feel about it. So I would be surprised if it got hostile out on the golf course. Now, maybe he says some things in the press conference that cause enough of a stir to make that to happen. I don't know, but if he plays his cards right, I think he can, you know, ground up some support at Southern Hills.
Chris, can you explain to us the Saudi Golf League, the LIV Golf League, whatever the name is, just what's going to happen? Obviously, Phil is one of the main guys that was supposedly supporting this. What Monahan and the PGA Tour are putting in place here, like, if you sign up for an event or you leave, you're never allowed back? Or what is the ruling here? What did Monahan decide to do?
So how it works is if you want to be a member of the PGA Tour, you have to abide by the rules and regulations of the PGA Tour. And the rules and regulations of the PGA Tour state that if you want to play in a conflicting event, an event, you know, the same week as a PGA Tour event, if you want to go play on another tour, you want to go play in a charity event, you want to go play in a YouTube video produced by No Laying Up, no joke, the players need to have a release, a signed release from the tour that says, okay, we own your media rights. You've kind of signed on to this. We have taken your media rights. We have packaged them. We have sold them to broadcasters, and we are funneling that money back to you. Okay, that's what we're doing to you. That's what we're doing for you. And collectively as a whole, this tour is worth more if everyone abides by this. Now, in little one-off situations, we will grant releases for you to play other events. How they do that is a question for them and not for me. But, you know, in the past, it almost always gets accepted. A certain amount of releases, sometimes it's with contingencies to say, like, okay, if you want to go play this event on the Asian tour, you got to come back within the next 3 years and play the AT&T that this event is opposite of. That's how it's worked in the past. Now, when it comes to LIV Golf Investments, the LIV Golf Invitational Series, or the Saudi Golf League, whatever you want to call it, it is seen as an existential threat to the PGA Tour, and it is something that is very different than playing in a one-off event. This is a rival league that the tour views as a huge competitor. So Jay Monahan has said, if you go and go play in this league, you are banned. You are gone. There's the door. You cannot do that. Now, putting in for a release to go play in one of these does not get you banned. That is not equal banned. I believe the punishment will come from both the level at which you are playing in this series and whether or not you do play in this series. So what has happened 30 days before the event starts, the tour owes responses to all players that put in releases for this first event, which is going to take place in London the week, I think it's June 8th through 12th or something like that. And what they did was deny all those requests, and they gave a reason why. They cited the regulation, led to that decision and said, you cannot do it. What we now look to next is who's going to go do it anyways, who is going to, what happens to that person when they go play the event and then go try to play a PGA Tour event? Do they get suspended? If they do get suspended, do they take immediate legal action against the tour to say, this is anti-competitive, blah, blah, blah? It's probably going to be, part of it's going to be really exciting, and another big part is going to be really, really, really boring with legalese. So I don't know what's going to happen. I think the names that have been rumored to go are going to go. I think there's going to be maybe one or two surprises, but nothing that's going to really rock the boat. And I think this whole thing is going to be, fought out in conference rooms by lawyers and settled somehow, somewhere. I just don't know how it's going to go.
Can you give us a couple names, three or four names that guys are going regardless? Like, they're just going. It's automatic.
Well, Sergio Garcia, with cameras following him and microphones nearby yesterday, said to a rules official that gave him a bad ruling, which, as an aside, Sergio was right. The rules official was wrong. But he said, I cannot wait to be done with this tour. I cannot wait to be done in only a couple more weeks, and I'm done with this tour. So, based on that, I am going to say Sergio Garcia is extremely likely. Lee Westwood is a name that is heavily, heavily, heavily rumored to the point, and he's been a defender of it, says he's signed an NDA. He's not kept it very close to the chest, that he will be one of those guys. I believe Jason Kokrak will be one of those guys. Kevin Na, potentially one of those guys. If you see Golf Saudi on somebody's golf bag, you can imagine that they are very, very interested in taking some of this blood money. Ian Poulter's been long rumored. I don't know how that one's going to go. He has, how will it shape out for some of these players when it comes to their Ryder Cup captaincies or assistant captaincies?
Crazy.
That, now that you're kind of turning your head on the, or you're turning your back on the DP World Tour, which has supported you for a lot of years. It's going to be a weird first event. I know that a lot of people that flat out don't deserve to make this much money playing golf will make a ton of money playing golf. And their strategy is basically to try to lure people in. Once those checks get cashed for that first event, they are hoping, that a lot more people say, like, huh, well, that wasn't so bad what happened there. I need to go play for that much money because it's way more than I'm making over here on the PGA Tour. So that's their strategy. When you have an endless well of money like the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund has, it may work to some capacity. I don't know. I think it'll work in fracturing the golf world a little bit, and that's not something as a golf fan that I want to see. But it's not close to being over. This could take years to play out.
With Chris Solomon of the No Laying Up podcast, I think a big part of this new tour's popularity will be how the media decides to cover it. For instance, we're in a very unique spot up here because the first event is going to coincide with the Canadian Open. And this show, we're going to be at St. George's. We're going to be live on the course. So yeah. We're not talking about it. You know, we're not even going to be following it for the most part. But I'm curious, you know, your podcast, No Laying Up, the Golf Channel, do you expect full coverage? Do you expect reporters? Do you expect, you know, Brandel Shamley to be breaking down what Lee Westwood shot at a Sony event? Like, yeah, or co-crack. Like, how do you see the coverage factoring into the popularity here, Chris?
Honestly, we haven't gotten that far. I do not imagine that it will be us breaking down the results of any of these events. If anything, it will be breaking them down almost for comedy's sake to say, here's how much this person made, you know, because I do think this first field is going to be pretty comical. And it's going to be highlighting, you know, what has unfolded here. What is it any different than what we thought it would be? What is the production like? Does this have any staying power? Those are all things that I think are very applicable to the golf world. And the key to this all being, can you be honest about it, right? Can you be objective about it and, you know, say exactly what you think about it? And that's exactly what we're going to do. Do I see it dominating, you know, in terms of what we, you know, feel like it's worth covering on the competitive golf scene? Absolutely not. If it's a comedy of errors that I think it's going to be, you can count on us, a lot of people in the media, to be paying a fair amount of attention to it.
Yeah, that's probably true. If there's material for us to goof on, we'll take advantage of it. I guess we'll get you out of here on a PGA question and a Tiger question. We believe mm-hmm. he'll be there at Southern Hills and a mm-hmm. PGA Championship next week. We saw what he brought to the table at Augusta. What is a reasonable expectation for Tiger Woods next week?
I promised myself I would never doubt his golf ability ever again. And I think I just caught myself ready to do it. Now, actually, I'll do it. Listen, the man has basically one leg, okay? I think a realistic expectation, a realistic best-case scenario is for him to make the cut. He can get around Augusta in a different way. The course knowledge and the course that he has for Augusta is really unlike any other course on the planet. He can play that place based on memory. You know, it is not as demanding off the tee from a fairway width perspective as Southern Hills is. It doesn't require a lot of shots out of the rough, which require a different, you know, layer of strength and touch that we just haven't seen him be tested on. And so I'm not as optimistic about his chances at Southern Hills compared to how he did at the Masters. I very, very much hope to be proven wrong and will continue to be stunned for every professional golfer that he beats in a major championship after almost losing a leg. So that's my honest answer. Yet at the same time, I scold people for ever doubting him. So who knows? A top 10, can it be possible? Absolutely. This guy has done things at certain points in his career, including winning the 2019 Masters, that I truly never, ever thought would be possible. So I'm happy to be wrong another time.
Yep, we'll find out starting next week. Great stuff, Chris. Always appreciate you taking time for us. Thank you for this.
Anytime.
There's Chris Solomon of the No Laying Up podcast. Yep, Tiger versus Phil versus the Saudi League. There's going to be a lot cooking in the golf world.
What I don't understand about the Saudi League is he just named the four or five, like,
that's a brutal field.
Dude, who the hell wants to, like who wants to be interested in that?
Yeah. Jason Kokrak
and Lee Westwood and Kevin Na on a three ball in the final group on Sunday. Nobody wants to tune into that.
No, it's brutal. Yeah. Well, it'll be goofing.
They're going to get local. They are going to get people watching, though. They are. It may not be a lot, but
do they have a TV deal? I don't even know. Like, that's
no idea. Wouldn't you think that would be out already?
Probably streaming. If they've got nothing but money, they'll sign a deal with somebody to stream it or do whatever. Like, they'll get it out there. Believe me. You know?
They definitely do. You know, I mean, they definitely do have money backing them, but I don't know. We'll find out. Canadian Open, though. Royal St. George's will be there making things happen.
Just St. George's, bud.
I know. It's just St. George's. I don't know why I'm starting to do that myself. Royal St. George's.
No, that's unacceptable.
That's over.
Royal St. George's is in the UK.
Yes, of course. It's St. George's. I know that. And recently, I'm not going to blame others, but it's like Royal St. George's. We're playing Royal. I'm like, no, it's not. St. George's.
Blame the grappler. He says it all the time. That's what it is.
Well, he is. He's familiar with that course. He played it earlier in the week, chewed it up. I think he's got he thinks he's got a chance of playing himself in. Maybe
really?
A sponsor's exemption for the Canadian Open. It's possible. No. Game five tonight, Calgary. We'll get into it. Dallas, we'll get into it. The Jays losing again today. We'll look back on that. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Don't sweat the technique. All right, it'll be game six tomorrow night down in Tampa. The Leafs are flying down. It's our understanding a lot of people from Toronto making their way down. It'll be tough to get tickets. But, listen, there's a chance for history tomorrow night. It's been 18 years in the making. Leafs can finally win a playoff round and make it easier on yourself. Show up and play tomorrow night. Show up and play.
Yeah.
At a minimum. So we'll tee that up a lot tomorrow. The Jays will be off tomorrow. They lost again today. You know, they can't get big hits. And Barrios, yeah, he did not have himself a good outing. He's got an ERA up around 5.40 right now. It's not been great for him. That's a couple of blow up starts his last two times out. But yeah, they're still above 500. There's a lot of season left.
You can't get too worried because you know they'll go on a as bad as it is right now. Three and seven in their last 10 and lost four in a row. You know they'll go on a heater where, you know, just erase all of that. So, and right, you just need your players to feel comfortable and healthy too. That's the biggest thing. If you're healthy, comfortable, settled in, play, they'll be fine.
They've had a tough schedule. They played a lot of baseball. They're playing the Yankees at the wrong time. The Yankees have won, I think, 17 of their last 19.
Yeah.
And the Yankees have beat the Jays four of the last five. It happens. You know, Judge walking off last night, that stings. Like Aaron Judge, his numbers are off the charts, man. He didn't sign that contract, but if he keeps this up, he will get paid somewhere.
He and just fans at it, and it goes, like, off the universe.
I know. Like, that's the park, and I think that would have gone out anywhere. Like, he's massive. He is a massive human
being.
He's
so big.
And if he connects and leans into it, it's gone. And that's what happened last night, right? Like, Stanton had a three-run shot, and Judge had a three-run shot. When those two guys are swinging a bat, like, it is doomsday, man. You're looking for trouble. You're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Jays are off tomorrow. And tonight, it's about a couple of game fives. I kind of feel like Pittsburgh will win and close tonight. Feels that way. The Florida-Washington series, I can't get a read on it. I'm not sure how that's going to play out. And I like Calgary tonight at home against Dallas. I think, you know, coming off a good win, that building will be rocking. I think they're the better team. I think they've played like the better team. Ottinger's been good. Pavelski's been good. Right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, the goalie's really been the difference for Dallas. Mm-hmm. Because the, you know, Calgary kind of broke through after game two. They're getting more chances now. And the goaltender's been unbelievable. And you just talked about my SportsCenter hit. Like, that's the, you know, Ottinger showed a lot of poise for a kid. And he's given them a chance to win. But think of the pressure. You know, at that game was 1-0 for the longest time.
Yep.
And Dallas was getting looks. Like, Markstrom made some really big saves to keep it 1-0, and then Calgary got through the Goudreau penalty shot and a third one too. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this game five unfolds for that series.
Yep, I'm thinking Lucic will factor in tonight. He's been in a bad mood. He's got an attitude problem right now.
Just walking in with the cowboy hat, I'd have him walk through the visiting locker room somehow and just act like he was lost.
Yeah.
Right.
That black shiny jacket and the cowboy hat and the hunched over shoulders, I would just be like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They love him in Calgary. They must love him in Calgary. His contract doesn't come up much anymore, does it?
No,
especially
because
in the playoffs.
He's found a role, and he makes $6 million a year, but he's farther down in the lineup, but Darryl uses him in a lot of critical situations. And
is this his last year, Jamie?
Yes, or one more year. Him and Neil have one more year, I believe, James Neil. And they got traded for each other. I'd have to double-check that, but I'm pretty sure they had one more year.
It was the Erickson, Oposo.
Yeah, yeah.
They all got the same deal, I think. It was a 7-year deal, was it not?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, seven times six.
Yeah.
So Lucic has one more year, at 5.25. So
it's a hefty deal.
Contract.
But, you know, if you fit under the cap and once you get to the playoffs, it's irrelevant. Doesn't matter anymore what your cap hit is. You just got to perform and play, and win.
Exactly.
So, that game is going down tonight. The Florida Washington series, I can't get a read on that. Like, I really can't based on.
Watch out for Florida, Hazy. I told you. Watch a team. Every team that wins has three or four moments, maybe just one or two, where it looks like they're down and out, and then all of a sudden, boom, tie it up, win the game. They could start humming now.
Yeah, they're definitely the favorites. They're the better team. They're at home. Bobrovsky is more than capable of winning you games, clearly.
He made a couple really big saves in that game to keep it almost like the Jack Campbell situation. He stopped three breakaways in a row to keep the score at whatever it was, 2-1.
Yep.
And then they tied it up and win it in overtime. So some timely saves for Bobrovsky.
Has to happen this time of year. Yep. And we expect that to be a big part of the storyline tonight. So enjoy those three games. You get a couple of games in the NBA playoffs as well. And then tomorrow, it's all about Game 6 down in Tampa, Leafs Lightning. We will be all over it here on the station, starting with First Up with Karolnik and Koliakov at 6 a.m. Leafs lunch. Matty Cause will be on, of course. So we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.